Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 80 of the Outlander podcast.
You'd think for such a momentous episode, it would sound much grander than
80. Maybe not episode, but number.
Maybe.
Yes.
80. I don't know.
It's lots of few syllables.
It's not nearly as like prestigious sounding as 79.
Yeah, that's true. We've come off of a decade of longer syllable episode numbers. Does that make sense? So, yes, as we were saying, welcome to episode 80 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. We got a couple new shots from the Outlander Stars Instagram account. We got a picture. Obviously, both are behind the scenes, as most of the new ones are now. A picture of Jamie being, you know, cuffed to, what would you call that, like the post?
The post wherever he's being whipped or flogged.
Whipped by Blackjack. It's in the red coats in the background. His back is so nasty, y'all. Like, prosthetics needs, like, a raise. They did such a great job.
Or an award.
Oh, my God. It takes 2.5 hours to create his back scars. 2.5 hours. That's 2.5 hours any day that he has to have his shirt off in a scene to recreate that. That's crazy.
Well, oh, okay, so they're just saying the scars in general. They're not even saying this, right, which is more.
Yeah.
That's more painting, more prep underneath to have the blood come through, all that. No, they're just saying if he's going to be shirtless Jamie.
Right.
That's 2.5 hours. He needs to get there like at 3 a.m. as opposed to 5 a.m. Right.
2.5 hours. Wow. What if he just naps? Like, if they have him, like, laying on, like a massage table
and
just napping.
Let's say you had, knowing with the schedule, right, that you had a week where every day that week, or the next episode block, 2 weeks or whatever, that you were going to have shirtless scenes every single day. Because it was in the schedule. Seriously, I wouldn't go home till the weekend.
Where would you go?
I don't know. I'd find a cot in the studio somewhere. Because if I had to, like...
Oh, he's got a driver. They pick him up, which means he can nap in the car. He's fine.
Well, depending on how long the drive is, but yes.
We also got a shot of the bedchamber. Looks like right after the wedding. I remember this scene. I'm sure we all remember this scene, actually. When he's basically putting his kilt on, and by he, I mean Jamie, is putting his kilt on and leaving the room, and Claire's still in her shift. But this is a cute little shot of them. Basically, right before he, like... I think this is right before he kisses her and leaves the room, basically. When they're still in their bubble of, like,
just before she picks up her dress and the ring falls off and shabam.
Yeah.
Loss of magic
line. Yeah. Mood killer.
Exactly.
And finally, last but most definitely not least, Outlander has finally officially gotten its UK distributor. And that it will be released by Amazon Prime Instant Video. And I believe it was, what is it? It will be... It will start on March 26th, 2015. They will be able to stream it, all the first 8 episodes, kind of like most Netflix stuff where they release the whole series at once. So they'll get the first 8 episodes for like binge watching on the 26th of March. Mm-hmm. And then starting on April 5th, they will get one a week, basically on schedule with Canada, I think, right now, right?
Yeah, just the day after.
Just the day after the US. So... It took you a little while to get there, but honestly, you're going to be in such a better place because you will not have had to wait for the Droughtlander 6 months that the rest of us have. So, congratulations, UK. Welcome officially to the Outlander family.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are reading... Well, we already read it. We're discussing... Chapter 19 from Dragonfly and Amber, entitled, An Oath is Sworn.
And it's in English.
The title. It is in English. You know, it takes very little to excite me about reading chapter headings.
Ginger hasn't had a drink in about 6 months for the podcast.
This is going to go right to our head.
We've already had, like, the last 20 minutes of mostly Ginger laughing, but it's going to be a little bit of a laughy podcast.
Now, if it's not, I'm going to be disappointed.
Chapter 18 ends with Jamie clocking Alexander Randall,
who thereupon collapses into a heap on the floor.
Okay, so you say the word clocking, and when I think clocking, I'm thinking somebody with a stopwatch checking their time and not, like, decking him or, like, you know, cleaning his clock. But clocking to me, cleaning his clock, I've heard, like, punching somebody, but, like, clocking.
I've heard of clocked him on the chin.
Yeah, but when I think of the word, I'm just saying, when I think of the word clocking, timing. I'm imagining somebody with a stopwatch.
I don't think they had him back then.
And that's not what happened.
No. I do not think it is an accident that Claire, speaking of clock, hello. I do not think it's an accident that Claire, quote, stops time by removing the counterweight. It also had the effect of stopping the noise that she wanted to stop, but did you notice that she stopped the clock?
I didn't. Okay. But look at it now. But that, to me,
it's just that, interesting.
It's interesting, but when I think of people stopping clocks, it makes me think of, oh my God, you lush. She's stealing my wine, people.
Wait.
And I didn't remember noticing that moment in the book when I was reading it, but I think that maybe, like, metaphorically, something died in their time in Paris.
In their plans?
Yeah, like, I think
that's a good point. I never, ever thought that, but totally. At least their momentum died. Some of their momentum died, right? Because they still have the goal of stopping Claude. They know what they want to do, but they were kind of chugging along.
Yeah.
So little by little getting, you know, deciphering coded messages and collecting mail. And
well, and everything was moving along swimmingly, exactly. And they didn't have really anything.
And then the shiznit hits the fan. Poor Mary Hawkins. Yeah, all that happened last week. And that's very interesting. So I just thought it was interesting that, quote unquote, time stopped. Yeah, if you make the connection to people stopping the clock when someone died, like, say, in Victorian times, that's very interesting. We can't necessarily put our finger on it, what it was, what element perished, but definitely the state that their path, their plan was in, chugging along, you know, on the down low, got blown up.
Yeah.
Well, they weren't found out yet.
No.
But their covers or the ease with which they can do things now, they have a lot more trouble, you know, with the whole jail thing and all the stuff that's coming up in this chapter.
Yes.
The investigation.
They've been above board up until this point.
Exactly. So I think that's a very good observation. Bathtub.
Yeah.
So apparently the dinner party was the party of the season. Have you ever been to a party of the season? Either literally or of the, like, wow, gossipy kind.
Yes.
Oh, was I there?
No.
Was it in California?
No.
Okay, then okay, go ahead. Tell us about it.
I can't. And that's the thing about parties of the season is that you had to be there.
Can you tell me the state?
Nope. It's like Vegas. If you're in Vegas, it stays in Vegas.
Was it in the U.S.?
I'm not even going to say that. Because to say that would give you more of an inclination of what it was and where it was, and I'm not even going to go there. My point is that it's a different time period now, whereas the things that go on at parties that are, like, a big deal, gossip things, you kind of keep in yourself.
You mean the 18th century and the 21st century? Or now, today, and when you went to that party? Because you said it's a different
century. Between then and now. Like, the book time period and now. Like, they were constantly craving. Like, that was the biggest thing, was to have
that
gossip thing to do.
That and the opera.
Whereas...
And plays.
Whereas nowadays, if you go to, like, a kick-ass party that's got... stuff worth talking about, you don't talk about it. First rule of Fight Club. You don't talk about Fight Club.
Okay. I don't know exactly what you're talking about. We'll chat later.
So, no, we won't.
Claire doses up Mary. I have Mary with poppy juice, and I almost said Mary Poppins. Claire doses up Mary with poppy juice to take care of her, and then lays out the two bodies.
Didn't she learn from the last time she gave her poppy juice?
No, she didn't give her enough poppy juice.
Oh.
We talked about that.
No kidding.
Claire doses up Mary with poppy juice to take care of her, and then lays... That's what it's called.
Every time you say it, you're like, poppy juice.
Poppy juice.
Poppy juice.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Poppy.
And then lays out the two bodies alongside each other like Romeo and Juliet, or like a couple of dead mackerel. Take your pick. Silas Hawkins, understandably, is shocked and appalled at the scene he'd just seen. and goes in for blood. He blames Jamie, the filthy Scottish prick, and Claire, strumpet whore, procuress.
Yeah.
Jamie, having had enough, clocks him as well. The way Silas Hawkins is described to fall down, like falling down the wall, is just like out of a movie. I mean, it was very well described. Have you ever been clocked or kicked?
I was on a swim team for a very long time, and they had a stopwatch. So, yes, I was clocked pretty much during every event.
Literally. Have you been punched?
No.
Have you been kicked?
I mean, you've kicked me.
I've never kicked you.
You did kick me, and you broke your toe.
That was underage. Doesn't happen.
But you did kick me and break your toe and kick me.
I don't speak of things that happen
under
age.
I'm just saying that my shin broke your toe.
I didn't know what you were going to say there.
No. My claim to fame is getting out of a fight by faking an asthma attack.
I think you told me about that. Tell listeners about that. Remind me.
I mean, I don't think anyone from 8th grade, no, 7th grade, is listening to our podcast who's going to come
just
back
don't
and actually.
Names.
And I don't even remember their names.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, I don't think they're going to try to find me now and actually, like, kick my butt now.
Oh, I see.
But there was just this big understanding as 7th graders are, you know, want to do. They make misunderstandings and everything gets blown out of proportion. And I think we were at like lunch, like some recess, and like the circle formed. You know the circle.
Uh-oh.
The circle formed. Like
the Do you know what was causing it up to that point?
No, I think it was a misunderstanding. I had said something to somebody, they misconstrued my words. And
they were just going to get back.
Yeah. And somebody was thought that I'd said something disparaging when I hadn't. And to save face, they decided that it was time to circle up and, you know, kick my butt. And when the circle formed, in my brain, the only option was to have an asthma attack, a fake asthma attack. And then they all took me to the nurse's office. It was like the most awesome ending to a fight ever. Nobody hit me. Nobody kicked me. They all carried me to the nurse's office.
That is the best story for something that others had, where others had intended violence of some kind. Mm-hmm. And you not only turned it around, you did it in a nonviolent way.
I'm Gandhi, what can I say?
You're so not Gandhi. But that was a pretty Gandhi of you. Oh my goodness. I don't think I've been kicked. I mean, my cats have, like landed on me in awkward angles. And that
I
hurts.
Mean, if we're talking animals, I had a cat when I was growing up who used to, he was, like, totally cool. Like, he had, like, a switch, and I don't know what exactly it was. But we'd be just chilling, and I'd be petting him, and then all of a sudden he'd just get, like, a wild hair and turn around and just, like, bitch slap me in the face. Like, he didn't have claws. He was declawed because he used to literally climb the walls.
Is this that black and white one?
Yeah. And but literally, he would just turn around at me and
Wasn't he like a barn cat before you got him?
He was a farm cat.
What happened when the cat was brought home for the first day? Didn't you tell me?
Well, he's
in your bedroom.
I'll tell you what happened. We brought this farm cat home, and the farm cat was at the farm where we got him. He was so chill. Like, he was like the coolest cat. And I was like, okay, I want this cat. Little tuxedo black and white cat. Get him home.
He's like, what, 8 months old or something?
He was like 7 or 8 months old. He was like not a kitten.
Yeah.
And I brought him into my room because, you know, they always say when you get a new animal, you start them in one room of the house so they can get used to the smells. And then you gradually, you know, open the house up to them. Yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, he's my cat. He can start in my room. And so I brought him home and I put him in, opened the carrier in my room, and he kind of ran under the desk. And I was like, and I look under the desk and I was like, hey, kitty. You know, it's okay. And he looked at me with, like, Satan face and, like, hissed at me with such evil that I was like, I'm going to go. I'm going to spend the night someplace else because I can't sleep in this room with this cat who clearly hates me right now. I came home the next day because I went and stayed the night at a friend's house. And I came home the next day and, like, my room, like, my bed was stripped. Like, I was
I didn't know you didn't see it.
No, I, like, came home, I was like, what the crap happened in my room, literally. I was like, what happened? You know, my bed's been stripped. Oh, that was the next part.
Okay.
But apparently, while I was gone, he crapped on my bed. Like, he was so mad that I had taken him away from his idyllic farm existence that he decided that the way to get back at me once I left was to poop on my bed.
Or he was just showing you how much he liked you by his ownership.
By pooping on my bed.
This is my home.
Boom. By pooping on my bed. But what was crazy about it is that after 20, it was his bed after that. After 24 hours of me not being in that room, I like came back and he was like the chill farm cat that he was at the farm. Like he was no longer like scared out anymore. And he was like my best friend from like then until the end. But yeah, he did like to bitch slap on occasion. And he'd get you like right in the, like either right in the eye or right next to your, like right in your cheekbone. Like he had really good aim.
But that's the closest I've gotten to being hit in the face.
I remember him. When another guest thinks better of going after Jamie with a wine bottle, the Comte Saint-Germain eggs Jamie on with, quote, "Why stop now, Tuaroc? Hit all three of them. Make a clean sweep of it." And I immediately thought of Supermarket Sweep.
Of what?
Supermarket Sweep. That game, remember in the late 80s?
I mean, I do remember, but I'm trying to see how you're making it correlate.
Just the name. He said, make a clean sweep of it. And I immediately thought of Supermarket Sweep.
Okay.
It was a cool show where they run through the aisles.
I know.
And get,
okay. I remember the show.
Okay.
You know what other show in the 80s I loved?
What?
The one that was like the mall show where it was like a fake mall where they had to go into the different stores. I don't even remember what it was called. It was a game show, but it was like a fake shopping mall. And each little fake store had like a pedestal, and each pedestal had a gift on it or a card on it or a box. And they would answer questions and then get to go to pick a store and then they would win whatever was under that box or something. But what I remember the most is that the end of this game show, they would have to run. Like they had like a time period where they could go and get so many stores and pick so many different presents from these stores. And they would literally, and it was like two stories, like there was like several stories to it. And these people were just running around and grabbing presents. And I don't remember what it was called. I wish I did. But that was one of my like 80s game shows that I loved to watch.
Jamie warned that the Comte should leave, but he was having the time of his life.
What did you say? Comte should leave? That's what I heard.
We'll keep that in.
That's what I heard.
Jamie warned that the Comte should leave.
Okay.
But he was having the time of his life, and he was not drinking Chablis. I think it's a drink.
It's wine.
Okay, there you go. There may have been a scuffle, as Jamie was likely going to make the Comte leave, but then the latter pulled a knife on our Scott. But the Duvernays were able to make the Comte see sense. The greatest dinner guests...
Okay, every time you say Comte, whatever follows it, I immediately assume it's going to be French. So what I heard was consistance. And I was like, what is that?
The greatest number of dinner guests don't leave until the King's Guard arrives. And they do so, as Diana writes, quote, brimming with scandal. They're scandalized, but they want to hang out and be scandalized.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I was saying earlier. It's like, that's... They have literally nothing better
else
to do.
In their lives, yeah.
This is what they thrive on. This is what their entire existence is built on. They have nothing else. Most of these like ladies don't do anything. They sit at home, get pampered, whatnot. They live for the nights out where they can go and drink and hang out with a bunch of interesting people and hope that somebody else has something horrible happen there that makes their life
that
seem...
That gives them drama.
Yeah.
Excitement. Silas Hawkins wanted to charge Jamie with kidnapping. Jamie agreed to go to the guards' headquarters at the Bastille. To explain himself, maybe? Alex Randall was taken, too. The Duke had left as soon as there was a hint of any scandal. He couldn't take a chance at being connected with anything like this. Jamie was the only thing that saved Claire from being taken away as well. He refused to let them take her on grounds that she was pregnant, but she was not allowed to leave the city.
I mean, that's pretty standard, though, for Jamie. He's the only thing keeping Claire
dying,
from being killed or taken.
Murtaugh was evidently going with him, and Jamie tells Claire that if something goes wrong, but then stops himself. He says only, if you need a friend, go to Louise. As the carriage takes them away, Murtaugh is, quote, clinging to the rear of the carriage.
Of course he is.
I like this image. I didn't catch that before, just like I didn't catch her stopping the clock before. Fergus is there, though. He watches the carriage.
I love that he leaves Fergus. He's like, dude, you're in charge.
You
take care of her.
Fergus is there. He watches the carriage until it's out of sight, and then takes Claire by the hand and takes her into the house and tells her he is to care for her until his not his master, but Jamie, his lord, returns. I do wonder if Claire started the clock back. We don't hear about it, so I guess not.
But could you imagine...
The clock, yeah, I know.
Well, no, not even that. Don't be like that. My point is she's not going to have the right time at this point.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have, like, you know, satellite clocks or one really good clock to base all the rest of them on. I mean, that clock is just going to be in or around the right... I mean, it's been about a half an hour since I stopped it, so I'm just going to guess. That's what I think. I'm like, she's going to have
wait until the next church bell times.
Tolls. I guess that would make sense. Either that or she just has one very inaccurate clock in her house.
Fergus takes his duties very seriously. She suggests to him that he go to bed, but he says that he can't leave her, and she thinks his presence will be comforting like that of a cat or dog. I don't know why that makes me laugh in a very sad way, but it does. Claire, he's more than a dog or a cat. Claire, alone with her thoughts, is trying to relax, but it is not working. She's worried about Jamie, of course, and wonders what will happen if he didn't come back. And over and above her fear for their plans being delayed or spoiled, there was the image of him in a prison cell, of him in Wentworth. Even though she said it was over and above, I'm thinking that's her association she has, period.
You know, and I like to think that everything in Paris is just a little bit better.
I was about to say, everything in Paris stays in Paris, but that's not true. Yes, that too.
That's not true.
But I would like to think that everything in Paris is just a little bit cleaner and nicer.
Than
things in Scotland.
Oh. Cities are probably not clean.
I'm just saying. So Wentworth was probably a jillion times more barbaric than less civilized than wherever they ended up taking him. They didn't take him to the Bastille this time.
Yeah, they did.
Did they?
Yeah. That's where the guards' headquarters were.
Dude, I would have remembered seeing that word.
Oh, I thought at least once.
Your face. Hang on. I mean, I know he goes to the Bastille later in the book. I didn't realize he went here as well. Hang on. Oh. No, it says, why aren't you locked up at the Bastille?
That's the locked up, though. That's because he came back.
Okay.
Beforehand.
But I mean, the office is,
yeah, that's where the guards' headquarters are.
All right, fine. Whatever. I'll buy it.
For a dollar? Then her thoughts go back to the rape and the attack. Who or what was La Dame Blanche?
Her, obviously.
What sort of white lady... And why had it scared away the attackers? She reflects on the general's comments about criminal gangs and how some were members of the nobility. She couldn't place her memory of her attacker with anyone she knew. Then comes the line of the title of the book, not the chapter. She's making plans for action for the next day, but for the night, she is, quote, powerless to move as a dragonfly in amber. As she is running fingers...
But can we just take a second and think about dragonflies in amber?
Yeah. They're really old.
Okay, that's not really where I was going with that. Okay. But can you imagine...
Poor dragonfly?
Not even that. How still that dragonfly must have been. How they just, like, decided to chill there and waited for the amber to, like...
No.
The sap to run over their bodies?
It doesn't take much. If they land on it... If they land on something with sap, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even like a drop gets on a wing, or if their foot, because it's so thick, it's like, I mean, it's not syrup, but it's akin to syrup, right? Mm-hmm. It's thick and viscous.
Maple syrup is a type of sap, and amber is sap.
Okay, perfect. So there you go. So they're both very viscous. I don't know. I haven't seen liquid amber, you know, before it's become resinous, but it's something that on an animal so light and whose appendages and whose wings are so thin and so light and airy, whatever, it takes... I mean, what do they tell us about butterflies, right? Not to touch their wings because the powder comes off. Mm-hmm. And I think that part's true. I'm not sure how much this would actually affect their flying, but the oils on our skin actually get on them. And yes, rub some of the powder off, but I don't think the oils of our skin would make them not be able to fly as far as, you know, weighing them down, like... We're not pouring oil on them. I get it. But the point is,
a cup of olive oil and just pour it on butterflies.
And then you eat them.
I don't eat them.
You just want to torture them.
I just like them glistening.
Okay, that is so wrong. Anyway,
I don't do that.
They're so light and so dragonfly-y that they technically don't necessarily need. Think about a mouse on those
glue traps.
Yes, which I think are inhumane, but that's a different discussion.
So you would say like
they can't get out of
it. A dragonfly is to Amber as a mouse is to a glue trap.
Except that a mouse can only get stuck on it and die. Can't be stuck in Amber.
Well, that's because
I mean,
a mouse could be stuck in Amber if
no, not Amber.
I think
a mouse can get stuck on a sticky trap.
Well, because it doesn't continue to flow over him.
Oh, it never started.
Right.
But it doesn't
It's not a flow, it's just a patch he steps on. So it's like the dragonfly lands on the patch, but then the source of keeps dripping over them. Okay. But in my brain, it's a lazy dragonfly who just sits there and waits for his death.
As she is running her fingers through her hair, one of her hairpins is tangled in her hair. Fergus offers to get it out for her, and then he does the others. As he helps her, her breathing slows. Her hair comes down. Then he's brushing her hair. He says, the ladies used to say it helped them if they were feeling worried or upset. We find out that it was the ladies of the brothel. Poor wee Fergus had lived at the brothel, had been allowed to sleep under the stairs if he was quiet. He couldn't come out until the morning when the men had all left. Now, have you ever been to a brothel on purpose or on accident?
No.
Nothing like a brothel ever? Nothing akin to a brothel? On purpose or on accident? Be honest with us.
No, I've never been to a brothel. Have I been to places where lots of people were doing nefarious things? Absolutely. Were they paying for it? No.
So is this at that party you won't talk about?
I will not say.
Okay, so I had never been to a brothel on purpose or on accident, but I have had an interesting stumble story.
Oh, stumble stories.
Yes, just one. So in 2009, I was traveling in Europe around, it doesn't really matter what time of year, but it was in the winter. And I was traveling alone, and I was in Germany. And one of the good things about traveling alone is that people are much more open to come up to someone who's on their own, rather than, you know, maybe a big group or something. Especially females. If you're female, others will come up to you. So I was a single female traveling alone, and I met other females, and a few guys, but mostly females. And we'd met at the hostel, and then we'd go out and do shopping together or whatever. And this was in the winter. It was during the Christmas time. So we went to some Christkindlmärkte, which is very big in Germany. So one night, and we went, like, I was there for 3 nights. We went, like, 3 nights in a row. We did it and did it and did it again. So are you
saying Germany has a red light district that I didn't know about?
Germany has a red light district? I don't know about that. I just know that there's something I stumbled into.
Oh, okay.
So we were going to the Christkindlmarkt in this city. And I didn't know. To this day, I wouldn't know. It was dark, right? Well, it was at night where all the pretty lights were out. We were out among all the crowds, and then we were ready to go home. Ready to go back to the hostel. So I totally rely on these girls to get me back to the hostel because we're all staying there. And I couldn't tell you. I'm like the general director and it was behind us. But I couldn't get back. You know me in directions. It's not a wonderful thing always. So I'm following them. And they have the general direction correct. But we could have like taken a different street or a different turn, whatever. But we're going in the right direction. So Different people come out at night, but, you know, it wasn't scary or anything. You're just people just doing their own thing, out with their families and some not. And we're walking down this area, and I look up, and there's, like, you know, there's shops around and all these windows of the shops. And I see a woman who was wearing, like a nightgown with, like, a robe. And she was doing her makeup.
And like, on the street?
No.
Or, like, in a storefront?
Well, no, like, in her bedroom.
Her bedroom had a giant window that you could... Okay, I'm like, I'm trying to understand how you see this woman putting her makeup on. I see it through
the window. And there's a whole bunch of windows.
Was it a big picture window?
Kind of.
Okay.
But it wasn't like... It wasn't
sitting in front of the window?
Not really. You could see her through the window. You could see her in profile sitting at like a commode kind of thing with a mirror. And she was doing her makeup.
Darling, a commode is a toilet. So you need to not say that. She was not sitting at it. Okay.
She was not going to the bathroom.
I will go with that. But a commode is a toilet.
So she's sitting there doing, like, you know, her...
But I really wish she was sitting on a toilet doing her makeup right now. Because that would make this story so much funnier.
So she's doing her makeup or just brushing up, whatever. And you see her kind of in profile. in her bedroom. And I was like, but she was covered up. She had like a robe on. It was a very nice looking robe, but it was very girly, very feminine. And we were kind of walking by. I looked up and I told the ladies, the girls I was with, I said, oh my, does that woman know that she forgot to pull
in her bedroom?
She did. She like forgot to pull her blinds down or something. And they kind of looked at me. They didn't really say anything. They just were like, oh, okay. And then we walk a little further and there's another window. And I'm like, do people not understand that people are like collecting outside their window and like
watch them?
Something is going, like, this is really weird. Okay. By the third window, I knew something was up. People, these poor women who were putting their makeup on, getting ready to go out. Hold on. We're not forgetting to pull down their blinds or close their curtains. It was, yeah. And then we get past the third window and we look on the corner. As we turn the corner, what's hanging down from the rooftop?
I don't know. A red light.
A little red light. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I guarantee.
It was much more funny.
I guarantee these women are not poor.
No, well, they may not.
They probably make pretty good money.
Oh, well, definitely better money than
especially
than we do.
If they have a home in which to live
separately,
to prep and you know, advertise their wares, as opposed to the woman who has to stand in the street corners.
Oh,
just saying.
So have you ever stumbled into a
no I've never district? Been to a place that's had a red light district. In fact, when I lived in New York, Disney moved into Times Square and took away all the fun stuff.
Fun, you mean red light district?
Okay, when I was there in the mid-90s, there was like sex shops everywhere in Times Square.
I'm so not remembering that.
When I moved there in the late 90s, all of that was gone. It's like Disney moved Beauty and the Beast in, they moved in The Lion King.
Oh, so of course they had to clean
it up. And between them and Rudy Giuliani, they like took all the adult-themed everything out of what used to be Times Square. And it's still Times Square.
What is Times Square?
It's technically...
used to be fun Times Square.
Yeah, used to be sexy Times Square. But now it's just Times Square.
Fettigus says that the ladies would share breakfast with him, and he would help them out of their underthings. And they said he had the best touch of anyone.
Now is probably what makes him such a great pickpocket.
Exactly. So, let's go a little bit further with this. Fettigus is pickpocket... the best touch of anyone. What do you do pickpocketing with, and what do you touch with?
Your hands?
Mm-hmm. Let's remember this, dear reader. Speaking of combing your hair, or heck, doing anything to your head, massage, rub, etc., is it not one of the best feelings ever?
My
I almost
favorite
embarrass
things,
myself at the hairdresser's.
My favorite things are like a nice
you know what I mean.
Scalp scratch.
Yeah.
And I like my hair being pulled just a little bit. Those are two different connotations.
I might delete that last one.
Those are two totally different connotations.
That's personal.
Okay, whatever. I'm just saying, those are two things that, you know.
Then Claire asks him how he came to be at Madame Elise's. He says that he was born there. He would wonder which was his mother.
He seriously
But he never did find out.
One of the most tragic figures
oh
in
my
the
gosh.
Series.
Yeah.
Like, he stumbles into a much more lucky existence than he was born into. But if you just look at his background and where he came from, he's literally it's such a tragic figure. And this whole second half of this chapter kind of left me like a little bit sad. Like I was reading it and I was like, ugh, that poor boy. And then what's to come next? I was like, ugh, this is just tearing my heart out.
So in the morning, Jamie is home. He looks quite rough, though, but he's alive. Jamie carries Fergus to bed, and Claire gives him wine when he gets back, or almost gives him wine. We learn that things aren't all right, but they definitely aren't the worst they could be. At the Bastille, there had been much arguing. In the end, it was agreed that Mary Hawkins was the only one who could actually provide the truth of the incident, and since she was not able to do so at the moment, everyone was going to be locked up. Mr. Duvernay, however, offered security for Jamie. Diana writes, quote, he sat rolled up in the corner like a hedgehog all through the klitschmaklaver.
Oh, did you look that word up? Please tell me you did.
According to Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, it is chiefly Scottish.
Of course it is.
Idle talk or gossip. That sounds like a good episode title. What do you think?
I mean, I'll take it. Clish McClevel? Is that what it was?
Or Clish McClevel. You know what? I may be saying it incorrectly.
Oh, I mean, you probably are. We're neither of us perfect. I've got gossip, idle or foolish talk. Origin, 1720s to 30s. Clish, no, it's hyphen clash, gossip. The usual meaning of the Scottish word clish McClever, also clish McClever, clish McClever. Anyway, is idle talk, gossip, or empty chatter. The OED says that it was formed, apparently, with allusion to clish clash or claver, with echoic associations, and finds it...
How do you spell it, echoic?
Like echo with an IC at the end.
Got it.
And finds it also used as a verb, keep me clish McClavering.
This is way beyond what we need.
I know.
So it seems as if playing chess with Jamie so much actually did help them out. Mr. Duvalny claimed that because he'd played chess with Jamie, he didn't believe his character could be so immoral and blah, blah, blah. And what Jamie and Claire both agreed was that Mr. Duvalny didn't want to lose a chess partner.
No, I mean, obviously he was left wanting.
And then there is a rap, rap, rapping at their chamber door.
Okay, the raven. Nevermore, nevermore.
Murta appears, a little worse for the wear. He kneels before Jamie and asks him to take his life, since he has failed him. We see for the first time just how deeply Murta feels honor toward Jamie. He feels that he has dishonored his lord, his lady, their unborn child, and of course Mary. Claire observes that this is the most she's ever heard him speak since she's known him.
Agreed, but he not only feels that he's dishonored Jamie, he's dishonored Jamie's mother.
Oh,
because
yeah.
He made
this
vow in front of Jamie's mother.
Jamie says that he's not his chief and that he's sworn him no oath. Murta replies that indeed he had. When Jamie was no more than a week old, he swore by the threefold God that he would follow him, do his bidding, guard his back when he was grown and needed it.
Is that
and
a Catholic thing?
Threefold God?
Threefold God? Like Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost? Is that what that is?
No, I mean, that's the Trinity.
I know, but if you call it a threefold God, is that the same as the Trinity?
And that's what he means, I think.
Okay.
Jamie says that he would lay an oath on him now. He charges him by the oath he made to him and his mother to find the men and bring vengeance to them. And that is the end of the chapter.
That is the end of the chapter, but I'm not done talking.
What I liked about this whole thing is that even though this wasn't a vow that Jamie is acknowledging because he wasn't there and it wasn't an active vow that he made to him. And this is something that follows through with this book, the previous book, and all the books that follow with Jamie is how serious he takes everyone's personal concerns and vows. Like, even if it's not something he was present for or anything, if somebody comes up to him and is like, Jamie, I 100% believe in this because this is important to me for these reasons, and he, even if he thinks it's the silliest crap that he's ever heard, he's like, I see this means something to you, so I'm gonna make this mean something to both of us. And he kind of always does this, he like turns it and makes it work for everybody concerned, which is one of the great things about that character, the character of Jamie, is that, and part of what makes him such a great like laird, even if he wasn't born to it, you know what I mean, he just, I don't know. I think he understands people in a way that a lot of people don't.
I agree. And it's not just Jamie. It's also kind of, I'm not saying everyone at that time would have respected that, but compared to this century or even the 20th, at least the late 20th century, that type of thing was much more respected in general.
Let's just put it this way. When Murta came to him and said, I made this oath to your mother and it's important to me and blah, blah, blah. He could have said, dude, don't worry about it. Let it go. But what he said, but he recognized the fact that this was important to Murta. Even if it wasn't something that mattered to him, he's like, dude, you didn't offend me. You didn't, we're fine. But what he said was he recognized in Murta that this was something that was incredibly important to him. And that's part of what makes him such a great leader is he looked at him and he was like, this is important to him. So because this is important to him,
I'm going to charge him with a task that will make him feel meaningful again and allow him to do the... To
what he needs to do.
Or
to regain his feeling
of
honor.
I want to say reparations, but to perform reparations or do what he needed to do to get him back.
To make things right.
Right. And it is reparations.
If there was a way.
To allow him to feel better about what happened and to make it right. I agree with you. Make it right.
I think you actually said make it right.
I think it was a group effort. Okay. And that was chapter 19. An oath is sworn.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com. I dreamt it last night that my young